Hello, and welcome to Crime Theories Off the Record, a podcast series where I explain my interpretation of criminological theories behind the why, when, and where people misbehave. This is your host, Karen. Hello everyone. Today's episode is not our typical theoretical episode, as I will discuss a couple of frameworks, environmental justice and ecological justice, and the theoretical orientation within green criminology favored by those who wish to include animal rights. But before I jump into this, I would like to remind everyone that I am not an expert in every aspect of my field, but I have researched the topic. As mentioned in last week's episode, green criminology has no single theory. It has many different substantive and theoretical dimensions that have been described as a green perspective. Environmental justice is a criminological concern for two primary reasons. First, it concerns the distribution of environment among people regarding access to and use of specific natural resources in defined geographical areas. And second, it illuminates how specific social practices and environmental hazards impact specific populations defined by class, occupation, gender, age, and ethnicity. In other words, criminologists have long addressed justice and injustice issues but have primarily confined those studies to examinations of criminal justice processes. Criminal justice studies examine whether the application of law produces just or fair outcomes and is relevant to analyzing the distribution of environmental harms and differentials in enforcing environmental regulations concerning the effect community, class, race, and ethnic composition may have on those decisions. In addition, environmental justice encompasses a broader notion of social justice relevant to some types of criminological research and theories that deal with the philosophy of justice. Second, as a form of injustice, differential exposure to environmental toxins across communities is also relevant to criminological research on state crime, corporate crime, and state corporate crime. Off the record, the way I remember or view environmental justice is by focusing on human beings and their health. Their well-being becomes the focus of analysis. It must be noted, however, that this framework distinguishes between environmental issues that affect everyone and those that disproportionately affect specific individuals and communities. Acid rain, ozone depletion, global warming, and air pollution, for example, affect everyone, whereas other environmental problems disproportionately adversely impact people of color, ethnic minority groups, and indigenous populations. There are thus patterns of differential victimization that are associated with toxic waste dumps, extreme air pollution, and chemical accidents. Interestingly, people who experience environmental problems do not always describe or understand them in strict environmental terms. They may be, for instance, attribute these problems to alternative explanations, such an act of God, the result of sin, or something that must be accepted as part of the risk of modern living. And that can be seen when examining natural disasters. In contrast to human-centric environmental justice, ecological justice refers to the relationship of human beings generally to the rest of the natural world. Included here are concerns about the biosphere's health, specifically the plants and animals that inhabit the biosphere. Within this framework, the planetary environment is frequently seen to possess intrinsic value in other species. Particularly, animals have the right to live free from torture, abuse, and destruction of habitat. Through an ecological justice framework, the central concern is how humans interact with particular environments and the risk to everything that comes with them. This is rather complex, though, since it argues that humans are just one part of ecosystems and that all living things are intrinsically bound together. Ecological concerns are therefore global and transboundary, including diseases and polluted rivers, streams, oceans, and forests. Under this perspective, how humans interact with the environment must be evaluated regarding potential harms and risks to specific creatures and the biosphere. White states that within this broad approach, there may be philosophical differences in terms of the value put on humans and the environment. For example, from a deep green or biocentric perspective, diseases that kill humans, famine, and other natural catastrophes are nature's way of population control. However, considered a misanthropic, cruel idea that frequently sees humans as the problem. An act of omission is not criminal if it ultimately benefits biosphere generally. Off the record, we saw that with COVID-19. It is not surprising that when people and communities suffer from environmental harm, they think their well-being should be prioritized over environmental protection. protection. A related ecological justice variation recognizes the human contribution to environmental harm. Nevertheless, the difference is that whereas a biocentric perspective emphasizes that humans are part of environmental problems, the progressive approach argues that they are different forms and types of social power. This is important to note as we, humans, do not affect the ecology equally. Instead, environmental degradation occurs within the context of the political economy. Criminality is thus related to the exploitation of both the environment and humans by those who control the means of production. An example of this that I will never forget would arguably be the 2010 Gulf of Mexico oil spill. But to avoid deep diving into the consequences of the multiple oil spills around the world, by primarily those in the Gulf of Mexico, let's jump to our next theoretical orientation, animal rights. Animal rights include the concept of speciesism. Similar to racism and sexism, this concept refers to the practice of discrimination and prejudice, in this instance against non-human animals. Off the record, non-human animals are animals that have a mental capacity to perceive and respond to specific material objects such as other animals, food, obstacles, and predators. It is essential to recognize that from an animal rights point of view, this type of terminology allows humans to misrepresent animals as the non-inclusive other. This affects conceptualizing animal rights, treatment, responsible care, and abuse. At the heart of such differentiating thought and behavior is the notion, often deeply held, that non-human animals are perceived as inferior to the human species. Animal-centered discussions about animal rights have much in common with the environment-centered discourse of green criminology, but with significant differences and commonalities. Thus, as White notes, it is unsurprising that tensions can exist between animal rights and environmental justice and animal rights and ecological justice approaches. For example, where is the line drawn regarding animal rights versus human rights? As White asks, where do they fit into the ethical universe? Overall, there are indisputable links between and among the environment's health, human activities, and the exploitation of animals. Increasingly, according to White 2010, the language of quote-unquote rights is being used to frame discussions of harm and abuse that are now found in the three frameworks. It remains to be seen how these and other frameworks will continue to develop in the coming years, or even now. Undoubtedly, they will be significantly influenced by how individual scholars view this topic and the context within which they live and work. Thank you for listening and choosing our podcast. Please rate, review, and subscribe on whatever platform you're hearing from as we delve into more criminological theories. And don't forget to tune in to our next episode, Off the Record. If you need help visualizing crime theories or only have a few moments to review, feel free to visit and follow us on Instagram at ct.offtherecord.